The Inside Aperture podcast introduces you to the experts who use Apple's professional image management application to organize, edit, and output their pictures. Each show features tips and techniques that will help you improve the quality of your photography and bring efficiency to your workflow.
I'm here with Robert Leslie, photographer, who just returned from a big assignment. He was at the TED conference for 4 days, and he accumulated a lot of material, and he's processing it in Aperture. So we're going to just chat a little bit about that, because Robert has done TED with and without Aperture, so he's seen both sides of it. How are you doing today, Robert?
Pretty good. I'm trying to make up for the lack of sleep that last week's job entailed. I flew over from London to do it and went straight up to Monterey. And the shooting ritual sort of means being available for breakfast and things, and covering sponsor meetings and partner meetings at TED at 7 in the morning. Then the onstage stuff starts at 8:30, runs pretty well until 7, and then there's usually like a huge party or something to cover. So I'd be shooting up until midnight. And then I might be doing a few edits till 1 or 2 in the morning. So I'm just trying to make up for that lack of sleep and jet lag at the moment.
That's the wild thing about event photography, because, you know, people, they may go to this function or that function, but you're at all the functions.
Yeah, and actually this year, TED realized that they could probably hear my knees cracking by the end of the week, that they should get a guy who's dedicated for doing the sort of, they have an area called the simulcast lounge, which is where they have the main auditorium where the speakers are, but then they kind of transmit it simultaneously into a couple of other rooms where the other attendees can watch. And so they had a guy who was just doing the off-central activities, so that means I had slightly less running to do this year.
That's very helpful. So now you have this graphic. We're looking at your MacBook Pro here. You have this graphic on here that describes the content that you accumulated during TED. Why don't you just run down this list so we have some idea about how much shooting you're doing?
Yeah. As I said, I joked in the film days it would never be this, but basically over 4 days, everything was shot in RAW. It's just under 100 gigabytes of RAW files. It's just under 10,000 photos. From that 10,000 photos, there's about 900 selects that were made that were sent out immediately to press, online blogs, instantaneously, and all that occurred over a four-day period. Having done TED this year with Aperture and two previous TED events without Aperture, I can say that we wouldn't have been able to achieve anything like this. I'd still be doing the selects right now, probably, from the 10,000 pictures.
When you work in an event like this, are you doing the Aperture work also, or do you have an assistant?
Well, this is a pretty exceptional event. The biggest kind of other event that I do is the Cannes Film Festival, and at that one I'm doing everything myself. This one, because of the nature of the extreme bulk of material and the turnover to get it to the online blogs, which were one of the partners for TED this year, basically required that it would have been better to have somebody. So this year we had somebody doing all of the keywording and labeling and editing. It was actually Martin Gisborne from Apple who helped out to get that done, and it really facilitated getting it all perfectly done.
That's a really nice way to go. Now, Martin's actually pretty good with Aperture, as we both know. Yeah. Did you learn any tricks while you're looking over his shoulder? Did you have a chance to see, was his approach to Aperture different than yours?
Well, he knows what he's doing, so fundamentally there's a difference there. I wanted to get Aperture last year for TED. I had a kind of an advanced viewing of it in London in November 2005, and immediately I asked Apple and TED to see if there was any way to get it for the conference that was in February last year. And for one reason or another, we couldn't get Aperture up and running. They put images on the website that weren't color-corrected, color-balanced. There was no level balancing. Considering the scale of a project like TED, where you've got the founders of Google, Amazon, Al Gore, Bill Clinton, people, I found it really quite a letdown last year to have these unbalanced, unedited pictures being thrown up online that I had no way to oversee. This year, I would have liked to have done it, but basically Martin, who's become familiar with my work over the last year, And he can spot a good camera. He could spot which lens, which body I was using on each shot just by looking on the 30-inch monitors. So I guess if I learned a trick from him would be about how to organize the library better, because in a moment here I'll click up to the actual library that he made, and you'll see it's so precisely done by session, by speaker name, and then the keywording itself. I don't know, there must be 200 keywords he's put in each of the speakers, the theme of each session. And so if somebody wanted to cross-select anything, say prize in the search, all of the prize winners would come up right away.
This is one of the things that when I talk to Joe Shore and the other guys, when they talk about strengths of aperture, metadata, metadata, metadata.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Especially when you're shooting shoots like this. And then, of course, you know, you'll have to go back and over the years, people are going to want shots from the shoot and so forth. And the ability to retrieve those quickly, that's really a big deal. I mean, you're shooting 10,000 shots on one shoot. So, you know, you're going to need to be able to comb through that stuff pretty quickly.
Yeah, it's really fast. And actually, something I just mentioned to you before we started rolling here was in January, Ted put out an appeal to any kind of media-related partners of them if they may know somebody who may be available, talented, and desperate enough to organize their TED archive of photographs. I actually put word out to lots of press support that I knew in New York because their office is based in New York, but at the end of the day, they said they'd rather have me doing it, which worked out well because I did the TED 2006 and the TED Global 2005. And basically, I built the TED image library with images going back to 2003. It was about 28,000 pictures. I did all the keywording of each of the speakers, like I say, by their name, theme, year, day of the week they were doing it, and that type of thing. Built the whole thing in my MacBook Pro using a drive on the outside, driving the masters on the outside. But it was pretty labor-intensive. It actually took me 2-3 weeks to get it done. And then actually something I didn't point out about this year's TED, the Photo Lab thing, is it was co-sponsored by a company called Digital Fusion in Los Angeles, who are basically hosting all of the material online. And as a gift to TED attendees, everybody received in their welcome bag a copy of Aperture and also an access code to go to the digitalfusion.net website, so people can look out and review all of the pictures themselves online. So the archive that I made of the 28,000 pictures in January, February, that's slowly being put on that kind of server service with Digital Fusion and also this year's shoot. Because that frees me up a lot because I've had probably 30 emails in the last 3 days of people saying, can you send me a picture of this, that, and the other thing? And I'm like, look at the black envelope in your welcome bag and you'll find you can do it yourself.
I was looking at Martin's library structure here. Yeah. Is this your structure or his structure
here?
This
is his structure. There's the library, and from the library, which is the 10,000 pictures, he's made one sort of smart album of all of the sort of pre-selects. It's about 900 pictures, and these are the pictures that went immediately to the press, the blogs, this type of thing. Following that, he's broken it down to the photographers who are on location, so basically I'm 80% of it. And then there was the chap who was doing the sponsorship and simulcast and a few other bits and pieces. Martin himself did some pictures, it seems. But then within my category, the Robert Leslie one, we've got each day of the week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Then it's like sessions, morning, afternoon, then there's general. And then each of those has smart albums. And then what he's done is he's made a smart select of the entire library, where you can see them all. And actually, there's one section here I'm just going to put on, which is the TED Prize winners. And this is on my MacBook Pro, running from an external drive. I just clicked it there, and it went through the 10,000 pictures and found the 31 of the award-winning night, which was Bill Clinton, E.O. Wilson, and James Notchway, who's picked up the prize this year.
This is really cool. I sort of enjoy looking at how other people set up their project panes. So he's making extensive use of folders, and then he's putting project containers within the folders. Could you open up one of the project containers and let's see what he does inside one of these project containers?
It's funny because I've actually modified a few of them over the last couple of days. I said there's a few clients who were looking for specific things. Funny because I knew that for Jim's presentation, this is probably going a bit off topic from your first request, but they had these panels on the walls behind him of Gandhi and Darwin and I don't know who's up here on the left, Mother Teresa. But I thought, this doesn't serve what I need for demonstrating Jim Notchway's photography. And they had a large screen on the right side of the stage, and the only way I can get it was to go to the far left, which was this completely no-go zone, because that's where Clinton was entering and exiting from. And a bit like Jim Notchway, but in a lot less dangerous a way, I forced myself to get into that corner to get a few shots of him looking up in profile here with the screen just behind him. And it's funny, within 30 seconds, I had like three arms pulling me in different directions saying, get out of this area. And I'm saying, I'm sorry, this is only going to take 20 seconds, but it's the only way I can get this shot the way I want it. And it's funny because 2 hours after the session was done and these pictures had been sent to the New York Times and they were supposed to be broadcast on the Times Square billboard instantaneously, I casually come across Jim chatting with Martin at the photo lab area, and they're looking at this picture, and Jim's going, geez, this is really beautiful, the composition with the screen behind, the lights on the side. And I'm like, geez, what I had to go through to get that picture. And eventually I sat down in a chair really quickly, and even worse, it's like, could you please get out of the president's chair? I'm like, sorry, I'm just trying to get the right angle here. And then it was funny, as you see, there's quite a few of Jim, because I'm a bit of a fan here. We get to the section where Clinton comes up, and here he is in the audience. I was actually sort of nestled in the corner where there wasn't a seat, so I could get everybody casually hanging out. And it's quite funny, because Clinton, being a good politician, spots where the media photographer in the room is. And I don't know, there's another 400 people there, but I've got his attention most of the time on the shots here. And he was actually quite cool. He hung out, and there was a Paul Simon concert afterwards, and then there was a drinks thing, so I have pictures of him in different locations.
Yeah, he's doing a great job of making eye contact there, isn't he?
Yeah, like I say, he heard the click, and that was his signal. So it's like he's doing a test rehearsal with me, and then incidentally the audience elsewhere. But apparently this was being broadcast live on simulcast through blogs and all types of things internationally. So it was an interesting study in trying to get the best results out of limited positions and all that type of thing.
So I noticed when I was looking at your shots here, you had a great shot of Jim, one that he liked a lot, and it had 3 stars on it.
That was Martin who gave that a 3-star. Jim and I both gave it a 5, but the photo editor deemed it as being a 3. You know, it's all personal taste. I think something that it was a bit strange having less hands-on. This was just an observation I had this morning, because this was kind of the first time I've gone through the library. I found I had a bit less participation in the actual conference this year, because last year I'd be in the other parts where the sponsors were, and I was basically isolated to doing mostly the on-stage stuff. And even within the on-stage stuff, I had less room to play in movement-wise in terms of the audience. So it's I had less responsibilities, but I had to be much more precise with them. And it's funny, having a second set of eyes doing the editing of the pictures, yeah, you can see yourself. I'm back to Jim's selection here. A lot of them are kind of dark, but what happens is every single presenter specified a different lighting setup, so I would never be able to standardize my settings for shutter speed or ASA or anything like that. Some people like it bright, other people would have projectors with things behind them, so that was all different. But yeah, you're right about this 3 5-star thing. You got me curious. I'm going to go back to the beginning. I think what they wanted, because I know some stuff had to go to the New York Times right away, they wanted a good sort of square-on shot of the guy giving his talk, which I find a bit cliche, but I happened to do a few of those pictures. Yeah, the profile one is much more dramatic, but you only see half of Jim's face and things. So.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. And was he using the star system for the smart folders?
Yeah, the whole, like I say, each individual day has the smart folders in it. This was day 2 Thursday, so there's all of these individual folders. But then, like I say, the way Aperture works is that you can make a smart folder of the entire library, not just on the individual ones. So at the end, up at the top, you've got library smarts, which is a smart thing of Martin to do, where you've got the entire one, and we just have this one section of the prize winners ones at the top.
Oh, I really like that. In fact, I had never seen that before. So what Martin did was he created a folder at the top of the library, and then he put 2 smart albums inside of there that are pulling from the whole library.
Yeah.
That's very cool. I like that a lot. And then you drill down to the other folders in the projects and the albums within them.
Yeah, I was just looking at this morning. His overall selects, he basically gave things no stars, 3 stars, and 5 stars. He doesn't seem to like even numbers or something, and the number 1 bothers him too. And I actually wanted to try to modify his entire selects just to see what happens if I switch this up to just to 5 stars to see what we get from the whole week. And instantaneously there, it goes from 910 down to 203 just in the click of the button on the smart album there.
When you're working in Aperture, when you're also your photo editor, how much of the raw processing do you do in Aperture using the heads-up display, or do you find yourself round-tripping to Photoshop? How is that working out for you?
Well, it's funny. As a percentage, with each week that goes by, Photoshop gets opened less. So much to the point that I never really got so immersed in becoming a Photoshop junkie like some guys I know who do all these multiple-layer things and all those kind of things to do with the filters and such. So I never really got that attached to in the first place. I was shooting film till quite late. I was scanning stuff. I'd use Photoshop for cleaning dust off my scans pretty well and different enhancements in the color balances and things. But I was never that much of a Photoshop junkie to start with. And now that I'm doing mostly digital, I don't really find the need to go back to it pretty well. You know, occasionally with digital outputs, I find, I had this discussion with Antonin Kratochvil and a few other photographers, that it's not that digital is flat in terms of how it looks when it comes out of your camera. It's probably that maybe it's accurate. It's giving you the same number of zeros and ones at every... You know, I come from a sound engineering background, so I kind of make the parallel that every color range is like a frequency, so maybe digital is giving you the same number of dots of ones and zeros at every light intensity level. And what our eyes have gotten used to is like the characteristics of Velvia or T-Max or something, that we, that all of those, that range is compressed in different points so that it has certain characteristics and certain contrasts in certain color zones. So maybe we've been looking at a distorted image all these years, and digital is just giving us something that's flat. And what I find, especially when you shoot on RAW with aperture, is that you've got a RAW processing area, so you can do things like sharpening up the image before making an output, or and not having to put it into Photoshop to do any sharpening like that. And also with the advanced color balancing you've got now, so that you can go just into the reds, the yellows, the greens and stuff, and enhance, reduce that zone, it's really, really hands-on. So I find it saves more time in that you don't have to go to a second software afterwards.
I found the same thing, too. And one of the things that I've noticed while looking at your shot, you're a photographer that seems to focus a lot on getting it right in the camera on capture. Yeah. A lot of that probably comes because you shoot a lot of event photography and you don't have the hours and hours and hours to fiddle with it. So I think good capture in probably really plays to aperture strengths.
Yeah, it's funny. I started working professionally in photography in 1990. Moved to Paris. I was based in England. I was doing music up until that point, and a magazine opened up that was doing a different location each month, and it was a very high-end, printed in Italy on beautiful paper, arts travel magazine, and they would do not just a six-page article on a place, they would do 10 articles on architecture, literature, cinema, film, everything to do with the cultural aspect of a place, and it would run over 60 pages, plus a little guide section on hotels, restaurants, and things, and this was my training ground to be a photographer, and it was all shot on slide. And same thing, it would be like TED. I'd be up at 5 in the morning, I'd finish at midnight, and I'd be covering all of Cairo or Lisbon, etc., and I'd shoot everything on slide. And basically that got me started in understanding precision in getting your exposures right. And because I used to be in music, I ended up, for example, I did Peter Gabriel's World Tour in 93. I remember shooting all of the gigs on that, all of the concerts, in manual with just spot metering and just getting it bang on. And then to throw in another section, this is way off your original question, it's just about the training of having kind of like the mental discipline so that you get it right in the shot. I kind of had a detour. I started doing kind of studio work in Paris, but I was working for people like Vogue and Cartier and Lanvin, which is a million miles from the studio stuff, but I would be doing things with aquariums full of milk with perfume bottles in them, making explosions with fiber optic strobe lighting. And I had big exhibitions of those work in Paris 10 years ago, and everyone said, oh, this is just Photoshop. And I'm like, no, this is the slide. And you hold up the slide next to the print, it's straight from A to B with nothing in between. Because I don't, particularly now with digital, and because I've kind of moved to a different sector of events, in London, and across Europe, I can be doing six jobs a week, and it's like I just don't have time to let anything hang on. I prefer to get it done and sent to the client as fast as possible. And even now with the plugins that they have for Aperture with YouSendIt and some of these other things, you can fire things out immediately without even having to go into your email or export to email and that kind of thing. So it's all to do with having the precision to get the work done you need and then saving the time so that you can get on to the next project or sleep in my case.
Well, this is Derek Story for Inside Aperture. Thanks so much, Robert. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Derek. Thanks for coming down. It's been fun.
The Inside Aperture podcast is produced by O'Reilly Media. To learn more about Aperture, be sure to visit digitalmedia.oreilly.com/aperture for articles, tutorials, blogs, and podcasts. This show is produced on a Mac using Soundtrack Pro. See you next time.